Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, we're very honored to have with us my special guest, State Senator Brian Jones. He represents California's 38th district, which includes most of East County from El Cajon all the way out to Anza Borrego and north to Palomar Mountain. As a Republican and a member of the minority party in Sacramento, Senator Jones has actually been successful in getting several bills passed that are now on the governor's desk awaiting signature or that have just been signed into law. He's here today to talk about those measures, as well as some other hot topics of interest, both locally and statewide. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miriam. I'm glad to be on. Thank you for making time for me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. So before we delve into the details of the bills, I'd like to ask, what do you attribute your success to in clearly being able to work across the aisle to get some bills through a Democratic-controlled legislature, some of them even unanimously?
Right. Well, a big part of it is, building relationships with as many of my Democratic colleagues as I can. That's obviously helpful, knowing, your wheelhouse. Of course, I ran some bills this year that didn't make it out of committee.
Sure.
You may remember my religion is essential bill, but that was an important bill to just raise awareness of the condition of the pandemic at that point in time.
Yeah.
But, bills that are going to pass, it's based on relationships with the committee chairman, the committee members. And then, of course, when the governor signs them, making sure that my staff and the governor's staff are communicating regularly on the importance of the bills and what they do and the positive difference it will make, not just for the constituents in my district, but statewide.
Yeah, no, that's so important, that building relationships across the aisle. I think not demonizing, everybody else. I mean, obviously, there's legitimate criticism of things in both parties, but
right.
Acting respectfully toward others. And that's something that I think you've always done fairly well.
Newt Gingrich expressed a frustration once when he was Speaker of the U.S. House, in that most Republicans, when they get elected, they speak conservative but vote moderately when they get to the House that they're voting in. And he said, "I would prefer for Republicans to speak moderately and vote conservative." And so I've tried to follow that as much as possible, as it's productive, as it is productive in Sacramento.
Well, we certainly hear the same criticism of Democrats who sometimes get what they thought they were voting for the other way. Let's talk about your specific bills, though, which really have broad appeal, I think, across party lines, which is unusual these days. Senate Bill 400, I understand this implements the recommendation of the state auditor for the Department of Education to work with local schools to better identify homeless students and, help them get the help that they need. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. You may remember when I was in the Assembly, I served on the Joint Legislative Audit Committee that the Senate and the Assembly oversee the state auditor, not oversee the state auditor, but approve the auditor's projects. And so as a result of that, I've always kind of kept an eye on what the auditor is, when she does her reports, what she's reporting out on, and the recommendations that she's making on different issues. And this is one of the ones that my staff identified as an important issue, not just in my district, but statewide. And so we know that as homelessness has continued to be a challenge here in California, a lot of unfortunate folks that are caught up in that are students, high school students. And this is giving an opportunity for us to make a positive impact on students that are homeless and making sure we're identifying who those students are and getting them plugged in to the proper services that are available to them through the state agencies and the county agencies.
Yeah. So that includes meals, housing, counseling, all kinds of different things.
That's correct.
Yeah, very, very good. I know I was kind of shocked to hear how many homeless students have actually been camping out on our local community college campuses, for instance. Does this include high school? Is it only high school, or does it also include other levels?
Oh, no, it's students across the board.
Oh, great. Yeah. Wonderful. And we have some late breaking news that Senator Jones' bill to help homeless students has been signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom. Senate Bill 549, this one makes sure that in future pandemics, or maybe also in the current one, that social workers will be declared essential workers to be prioritized to receive personal protective equipment or PPE like masks and gloves. It's right. kind of shocking that they didn't already have this.
Well, this bill was born out of a committee hearing that we had through the Human Services Committee, an informational hearing we had back in the fall. And we had a witness from LA County, a social worker, testify that 33,000 foster students, get this, 33,000 foster kids in LA County alone that had completed every step and every element that they needed to complete to go to their adoptive homes, but mm-hmm. weren't able to because of two reasons. One, the social worker wasn't able to come out to do their final interview because they couldn't get the PPE. And second, the courts were closed and not processing these cases for these kids to go to their forever home. And so I about blew a gasket on the dais that day. Good and as a result of that, we came back, proposed this bill to make sure that in future emergency situations, when social workers are declared essential, that they have access to the proper equipment they need to do their job. Once we introduced it and got through its first committee hearing, SEIU and the U.S. Social Workers Association came on as sponsors and wanted to help with the bill. And so we've been able to get that bill through both houses and now sitting on the governor's desk.
Very good.
And it's not something you would normally see my name on, but as a result of that committee hearing, I just felt compelled to make sure that this isn't something that happens again.
Yeah, it shows there is compassionate conservatism still in some members of the legislature.
I like that term.
Yeah. Senate Bill 578, another bill that implements a state auditor's recommendation. This one would say that most conservatorship hearings should be held in a closed hearing unless a court specifically finds a public interest overriding privacy of family members involved. I have to say, I was a little bit surprised to learn that these aren't already closed. We're talking about things like where maybe somebody's being declared mentally incompetent, right. perhaps an elderly person with Alzheimer's. It's already tough enough for a family to have to go to court to make sure their interests are properly protected. And the idea that that could be a public record is, I think, might dissuade some people from even doing it.
Well, not only public record, Miriam, but public access, to the proceedings. So this, again, the law was vague in this particular situation. The auditor pointed that out. Mm-hmm. So we took this up as privacy, is important to me, working on the cancer registry information that we've worked on in the past and other mm-hmm. things. And so we introduced this bill. We've had very little opposition. We had to work with the LA juvenile court system to work out some things that they were, thought they were already doing to comply with it. But at the end of the day, we were able to get everybody on board and, again, get this on the governor's desk. It just basically says that if somebody's coming to court for conservatorship hearing, the hearing must be closed to the public unless the judge, under a body of evidence, agrees that the public interest is served by it being open. Then the judge can compel the hearing to be open, and that would be a very rare an odd case for something like that to happen.
I think so. Like maybe if it's a public official or something like that.
Maybe,
Or there's a political motivation to try to get someone declared crazy or something.
You got all kinds of names ringing around in my head right now. I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding.
I can imagine. Yeah. There you go. And we should add that the conservatorship bill has also been signed by the governor. Another bill deals with child labor trafficking, Senate Bill 584, and it would add child labor trafficking to the list of topics that foster families must receive training and information about. Obviously, human trafficking is an enormous issue in our area. Right. Some may not know that places like Lemon Grove and Spring Valley are actually human trafficking hubs in the whole nation, and yet so many parents and foster parents are unaware. So tell us a little bit more about that one.
Well, last year, this was originally included in another bill that dealt with sex trafficking training for foster parents. The author ran into some roadblocks and pulled this part of the bill out. So that bill did get passed and signed into law dealing with sex trafficking. And we worked with that author this year and got this language put back in as a single bill. And we're hoping that the governor will agree with this and agree that labor trafficking is also a challenge for foster kids. And we want to make sure that foster families' parents are trained on how to identify and protect their foster kids from this activity.
Very good. You also had a couple of bills that are described as technical in nature, but that are also on the governor's. So we'll give a shout out to SB 414. I guess that one the governor actually signed in July.
That was signed in July for the land surveyors. Correct. Yeah. That's just a cleanup in the code that manages their license.
Okay. And then there's also Senate Bill 534, which is another code cleanup measure. This one co-sponsored by the dental hygienists, the California Dental Hygienists Association.
And that's, again, a technical cleanup to their licensing code. I serve on the Business and Professions Committee. So every once in a while, we'll have the different licensing associations come to us, to clean up function of their licensing law.
Well, let's talk about another hot topic now, no pun intended, but that is fire safety.
Right.
Much on the mind of everybody, I think, in the state as we're looking at another year of just these record firestorms burning across.
Unbelievable.
You think it can't get worse, and it seems like it always does. And it's just a function of so many different issues. But you have raised some concerns, I understand, about the state's wildfire prevention efforts. Senator Jones, do you think that Governor Newsom and CAL FIRE, which has the funding for this, have done enough to prevent these devastating fires?
Well, Miriam, that's the problem. In this year's budget, we're spending billions of dollars on suppression of fires, so fighting the fires, which is CAL FIRE's job, but we're only spending millions on the prevention and the clearing. And so we've got to, in California, change the mindset of the environmental lobby, really is what it comes down to, that we cannot continue to not thin the forests and not do proper forest management.
I would throw in here that, interestingly, the federal government just changed their policy on that. We heard President Trump talking about raking the forests, which may have been an oversimplification. But nonetheless, under the Biden administration, they've now just authorized the Forest Service earlier this year to do a lot more clearing on federal forest lands to hopefully prevent more situations like the devastating Paradise Fire that started on forest land. But now the problem in the state, as I understand it, is Capital Public Radio did a pretty good job of an investigative report talking about the governor sort of overpromising wildfire prevention efforts. Right. He talked about 35 priority projects for fire prevention on 90,000 acres, but at least as of late June, only about 11,000 of those acres actually had the work done. And in 2020, granted it was a pandemic year, the number of acres treated actually dropped sharply from the year before. So what's your take on that report?
Well, it tells me that the governor has not properly made this a priority. He's continued to give attractive sound bites to make us think that, California is managing this properly. I just did a tour on the North Coast up near Mendocino on some of the redwood forests and, visiting and seeing the difference between a properly managed forest with proper thinning so that the trees can be managed for growth. And then a forest that wasn't properly managed is just a tinderbox waiting to go up. And here's my frustration with the environmental lobby in California is, they want to keep arguing that it's to protect the environment that we don't thin these trees out. But at the same time, they're also making arguments to end fossil fuel burning engines to protect the environment from emissions. One of these forest fires wipes out an entire year to a decade of auto emissions savings. And one of the larger forest fires has wiped out 100 years worth of industrial emissions protection. And so there's some hypocrisy amongst the environmental lobby on this particular issue that I think most Californians are beginning to see through.
Yeah, and also the wildlife. You look at the devastating loss of wildlife when we have a forest burn, and now even things like redwood trees that are thousands. These are trees that go back to,
Right now in California, we are working to protect the sequoias in the Sequoia National Park because there's a forest fire near Sequoia. And because of the heritage and value of those trees. When I say value, I mean historical value and not as a dollar value, but just what it means to California to have these forests there. We're taking extreme hard labor measures to protect these trees, where if we had just thinned the forest around them over the last 10 years, they would be safe. They'd already be safe.
Yeah, it's worth noting the Native Americans have done that for thousands of tens of thousands of years.
Right. Exactly.
In all fairness, I should say that CAP Radio did speak with Tom Porter, who's the CAL FIRE spokesman, and asked him how come so few of these clearing projects have been done. The reasons he gave, he attributed to several things. One of them, as you mentioned, is a lack of environmental approvals, also approvals from landowners in some cases. Great to say you're going to burn it, but if a landowner says no, you know.
Right.
Another is the COVID-19 pandemic, which hit CAL FIRE hard. There have actually been a lot of CAL FIRE fighters down with COVID or quarantining because of exposure. At one point, the majority of their pilots were actually grounded, which is scary. Right. And the last being the early start to what's turned out to be the worst fire season on record. So it pretty well led to, according to them, an all hands on deck approach just to fight the fires, never mind getting out and clearing things to prevent more fires.
Correct. Let's keep in mind that CAL FIRE's main job is to suppress fire, not prevent fire.
Yes.
So it's going to require some major funding resources from the state and contractors that the state now, and if CAL FIRE manages it, I'm fine with that. I think CAL FIRE administration does a good job with what they're tasked with. But, you know, currently they're not tasked with clearing major portions of the forest. And back to your point on private property versus, government property, most of the forest in California that's in danger is on U.S. Forest Service land. Mm-hmm. And so we need to get the U.S. Forest Service to clear out their dead trees. You know, Miriam, there's areas of the Sierras where 20% of the trees are dead, not dying, dead. And that's one out of five trees is already standing, but dead. And as a tinderbox, when fire hits that, they literally explode.
And it's so frustrating. It's not a new problem. I remember, I don't know if you remember back that far, but just before the 2003 Cedar Fire here, we had bipartisan signatures from San Diego's, I believe it was the entire congressional delegation, pleading with, I think back then it was it President Bush anyway, to clear the forests, to clear the forests out here in Cleveland National Forest, where the bark beetles were taking a toll. Yep. There were all these
trees. You do have a good memory on that.
And the answer finally came back, no. And that was like, I want to say a day before the Cedar Fire broke out, after months of sitting on the desk of some bureaucrat back in Washington who decided to do nothing.
And so why
haven't we learned from that? The same thing is still happening under every administration.
It's hard to get bureaucrats and politicians to learn from those kinds of mistakes, I guess. You know, some of us remember, and I drove through. That was a year after I got elected to the Santee City Council, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
When that fire burnt through Muth Valley.
Our publisher lost his house there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Our publisher lost his house in the valley.
So I drove through that area with the Santee fire chief, and that was my first experience with that type of fire and witnessing it firsthand. And when we were driving out El Monte Road, it was still burning, and deer literally jumped in front of our car and over the fence as we were driving through to see what was going on. So it's, sorry for the pun, but burned into my memory. And is not something I'll ever forget. And so, and because it's my district, you know, in San Diego, the most fire prone district in San Diego County is my district.
Yeah.
And so it is important to me. And that's why I continue to fight for these issues and working across the aisle in a bipartisan manner with my colleagues to move the needle as much as I can.
Yeah. Some issues should just transcend party lines. We should all care about whatever we need to do for fire safety. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on, another fire-related issue here. A lot of our readers are very concerned about losing their fire insurance out here now.
Yeah, and that's, that's a function of a couple of things. One, the danger of living in the rural areas, in the fire-prone areas. That's one thing. Two, the state not allowing the forest to be thinned like they ought to be. And then three, the Department of Insurance, under Prop, I think it was 103 originally, that put the insurance commissioner's office into an elected position under the DOI, not allowing the insurance companies to manage their rates so that they can have a viable business plan. And so as these fires burn down more and more expensive areas of the state, the fire insurance companies are looking at this going, we can't service these areas and stay in business. And so we've got to allow some creativity on those three points of getting the wildfire danger down in California.
Okay. The state has spent $13 billion or so in recent years attempting to tackle the homelessness crisis, which, of course, has only been exacerbated by the pandemic and, you know, people losing jobs and facing evictions. What are your thoughts on how the money was spent, Senator? And I understand that in a prior legislative session, you had introduced a package of what you referred to as solution-oriented homelessness reforms. Can you talk a little bit about your ideas on homelessness? And do you have any plans to try any of your bills again next year?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we need to, I think, keep in mind as a guiding principle for dealing with homelessness, the easier you make it to be homeless, the more homeless you're going to get. And what that's done for us in California is, you know, California, I think, is 12% of the U.S. population. The 40 million is about 12% of the U.S. population. But we have almost, a couple of years ago, it was 33%. And I think we're getting close to 50% of the entire homeless population of the entire country is in California. So California has 33% of the population, homeless population in America, and all 49 other states have the other 67%.
Wow.
And so obviously whatever we're doing wrong. And one of those things is continuing to throw money at the problem without having accountability for the programs that we're throwing that money to. So when the governor...
Go ahead. So you're looking at more oversight or what?
With Room Key and Home Key, we allow him to show one or two situations where that's working. We let him get away with, and I say we, the legislature and the media, the press, allow him to get away with walking away from the hundreds of stories where those two situations don't work. And then, of course, the Housing First idea that started this in the first place, giving somebody a home to live in without any accountability on getting themselves healed from whatever situation is causing their homelessness in the first place.
So you're talking things like addiction or alcoholism, mental health issues,
mental illness. And you know, I think Miriam, you and I, and most Californians would agree that those that are down and out financially and have run into some tough times deserve the help and should get the help. And that's in California right now, that's a minority number of the homeless people. And for a single mom or a single dad that are just down on their luck, lost their job, living out of their car with one kid or two kids or even no kids for that matter, but want help, the resources are there for those people that want the help and want to get out of that situation. And I think California, for the most part, and the locals, the counties and the local agencies that help those homeless people are fairly successful in allowing that to happen. Where we drop the ball is in the situation where the homeless person is either mentally ill, addicted, or may be recently released from incarceration without a proper home to go to. And now we're starting to see low-level petty crime increase because we've removed the penalties for those crimes. We've created, and I say we, and look, I got to be straightforward and honest here, Miriam. It's the democratically controlled legislature and the Democrat governor that their policies that have put us in this situation. Republicans come to the table every year with ideas that should work if we were given the opportunity to implement them. But unfortunately, our ideas are always held up in committee. And I would say the underlying principle of the Republican ideas is a carrot and a stick. We're going to give a carrot to those that want to get out of the homeless situation and have chosen to get out of the homeless situation and take advantage of the resources that are available through the state and the counties to do that.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly committed on our show to airing a variety of voices and a variety of views so that people can hear the arguments on all sides and make up your own mind, listeners, on what you agree with.
And I don't know, Miriam, the last time you've driven by my district office here in El Cajon, but today, right now, I have a homeless tent pitched across the street from my and it's a fairly good sized one. Mm-hmm. And then if you drive down the street next to my district office behind the Home Depot, there's a row of homeless tents set up right now.
Yeah, and El Cajon has a big homelessness problem.
Right. The sheriff's department will allow those to be there for a period of time. The El Cajon police will allow the one across the street from me to be there for a period of time. And then they'll come through and clean it up. And those people move on to another location. They'll be there for a period of time. And then the law enforcement will come. But the legislature and the governor have taken the tools away from the local police by minimizing penalties on low level crime to where the police can't even arrest these folks and compel them to get better.
Yeah, I do hear that from legislators in El Cajon, also council members who've told me that there's been issues of things like people stealing tent poles or things that they can use as tent poles from local stores and different things. And there doesn't seem to be anything that they can do about it. So it is an issue.
I want to be very clear on one point because, you know, I get it that Republicans get accused of not being compassionate on this particular issue. Miriam, I want these people to get better. And I think my Republican colleagues want these people to, and my Democrat colleagues do too want them to get better.
What is the answer? If someone has, say, mental illness and they don't think they need help, is the answer to just keep sweeping away the tents? Or how? It's really hard because it's very hard in California to force somebody into mental health treatment.
Right. So
if they don't want it.
At some point in time in California, as a society, we're going to have to make the decision, the societal decision, that compassion means not allowing somebody to live on the street in these types of conditions. And we're going to have to find a way to humanely compel them to take care of themselves and use the resources that are already available to them to do that. And sometimes that means going to jail. And sometimes that means doing community service as the stick, what I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And we can do that compassionately, Miriam. It doesn't have to be like the old days. There's new modern techniques to compelling somebody to take care of themselves. And if it's the drug addiction, they've got to go to a program and get well and get off their drug addiction. And right now, the legislature and the governor is moving in a direction where if you're a drug addict, they are making it easier for you to live on the street and be a drug addict and stick poison in a needle up your arm rather than go get better. And I would prefer to take the course of compelling them to go get better.
Yeah. Speaking of crime and public safety, you voiced a concern, I understand, about the rise in homicides, which went up 31% last year. It's interesting. I'm looking at crime rates from the Department of Justice as of July of this year for all of last year. And it's kind of strange, actually, because some things, homicides went way up 31%. And yet other violent crimes like rapes decreased 8%. Violent crimes overall increased a little less than 1%. Vehicle thefts, wow, up almost 20%. And the really scary one is arson rate up 43%. What's that all about? How do we stop that?
I think, you know, some of that's caused
by
the pandemic.
Down. I forgot to mention robberies. Robberies actually went down 14%.
So, Miriam, one thing I would request, you know, and we can do the research on, obviously. I mean, yeah. I know the answer. But any of those crime statistics that went down, one of the things you have to look at is prior to that, did the legislature decriminalize that activity? So, for example, Prop 57 raised the grand theft limit from $450 to $950. So as a result of that, you're going to see last year less of that crime, but this year you're going to see more because now people, once they get used to stealing $950, that next year they're going to steal more because they're getting away with it. So that, you know, we're going to start seeing more increase in that. Homicides, we didn't decriminalize homicides. So that's, you know, that's why you're seeing that number go up because actually there was more homicides. There's more petty crime in California. It's just not being reported because it's not a felony anymore. And so cops aren't going to write a citation for misdemeanor theft because they just know that the person's not going to show up. They're not going to pay the The cop's not going to waste their time with the paperwork. They got other things to go do than waste their time giving a citation they know is going to not be enforced. So you got to watch those statistics on everything that's fallen on. Did that crime really fall, or did it get re?
Sure. Like with decriminalizing marijuana, obviously drug crime's down, but that's just because, you know, smoking a joint isn't a crime anymore.
Exactly. Bingo.
Right. Right. Got it. Okay. Well, is there anything else that you would like to add for our listeners today, Senator Jones? We're running short on time, but do you have any closing thoughts to share here?
Sure. Miriam, one of the most often questions I get is, you know, what do you do up in Sacramento? How do you deal with all of this? And how do you get anything done? And I'll tell you one of the things, Miriam, that we're, and you've witnessed this with some folks that you've sent to us. One of the things that I take the most pride in my staff is the constituent work that we do in the office. We have over 2,500 cases that we've done over the last 18 months, just in EDD, people that were trying to get their unemployment benefits and couldn't because yeah. EDD wouldn't answer their phone. And somehow they learned to reach out to us and let us help them.
I'll give a shout out to your staff, Lori, especially. She's helped me a couple times with DMV issues. I got hung up where I couldn't get a, the global entry pass, you know, for a trip. They took one look and said, oh, you're a journalist. We don't want you traveling to Mexico. I wasn't going to report on caravans. I was going on a wine tasting trip, you know,
it
was crazy. And even if I was reporting on caravans, shouldn't we be able to do that? You know,
absolutely.
They were denying me based on a car I used to own. And yet my husband was a co-owner of the same car, where there was some issue with the paperwork, whether it was filed or not. It turned out it was. And I said, well, you approved his and you didn't approve mine. This is discriminatory. Right. And she got it straightened out for me with the DMV. But it was just craziness. You know, you call the DMV and they're closed for the pandemic. What do you do? You know?
Yeah.
So, she's been wonderful on so many different things through the years for so many people that I know.
Well, good. And I appreciate you recognizing that. And in any article that you write, if I can ask for a favor and you would offer to do it, just put a note in any article that if there's anything that the constituents need as far as service with a state agency or federal agency, we'll point them in the right direction. But we're here to help. My staff is here to help. I have one of the most professional staffs in the state and the most effective as far as getting constituent work done. And that's what we're here for. And that's our biggest point of pride.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.